The late U.S. Supreme Court Justice Potter Stewart said, "Ethics is knowing the difference between what you have a right to do and what is right to do." We're going to discuss that idea with someone who is at the forefront of elevating ethical practices across the board. I'm Garland McWaters, and this is The Spirit of Leading. The importance of ethical practices in every aspect of business, government, and the community is on everyone's mind these days. And all of those are converging and heightening as a new administration takes its place to lead our government in Washington, D.C. On this episode of The Spirit of Leading, I'm talking to Shannon Warren, who is the founder and CEO of the Oklahoma Business Ethics Consortium and a leading advocate for establishing more ethical practices in all aspects of our lives. Shannon, thank you so much for sharing your empowering story on this episode of The Spirit of Leading.
Glad to help.
I think I'm probably like a lot of people who hear about organizations and I'm not quite sure how they fit. They sound alike, but they're not the same. And there is the Oklahoma Business Ethics Consortium, and then I've always heard also of the Oklahoma Ethics Commission. Now, explain the difference between those two.
Oh, we are completely different. The commission has the very difficult task of making sure our legislators follow the rules, the ethics rules that govern campaigning and all sorts of things. Whereas the Oklahoma Business Ethics Consortium, or OK Ethics, we are a professional, 501c6 professional organization. We bring people together every month to hear about practical and inspiring ideas that you can take back and use in your workplace to promote integrity at work, Oklahoma standards of integrity at work.
I see that the consortium has a much broader appeal and a broader reach.
Our main constituency are business leaders, and we have about 200 companies with, I guess, around 800 individual members now. So they voluntarily join the organization. They voluntarily come every month to hear great speakers on the topic of ethics. Now, we also founded the Student Education and Ethics Development Foundation. Started out as OK Ethics Foundation. And it's primarily targeted to students, both at high school and the college level. And they host ethics bowls every year.
So. Okay, that sounds like a fascinating program all by itself. Well, I kind of want to rewind a little bit and go back to the beginning,
sure.
Because every story has an interesting sort of path to it. And I know the Oklahoma Ethics Business Ethics Consortium goes back to about 2003. Why did all this start and where did all this start?
Well, Garland, it started with a professor that I had at Oklahoma City University. And I had written a paper on ethics. At the time, things were a mess. We had Enron and WorldCom and oh my goodness, a lot of misbehavior. And so I was looking at that along with Sarbanes-Oxley Act and so forth, and I submitted my paper. I was very passionate about it. And he said, well, you know, you ought to get together with some other people who are interested in that. And I said, oh, that sounds good. Do we have something in Oklahoma City? And he goes, no, I think there's one in Texas. Well, that was all I needed to know. I was like, we have one in Texas and we don't have anything in Oklahoma. And our concept is different than what I initially heard from the Texans. We believe that everybody's responsibility is to promote integrity and ethics in the workplace, in our lives, in our community, in our family. And so it started with just word of mouth. I, of course, invited that professor, and there were about six people. Next thing I know, I got invited to speak to a large group of human resources people, and we said, you know, we're thinking about organizing this group. Well, we went from six to 12 people, to 25 people, and then Tom Hill, who established Carriage First, offered to host a meeting. We blew up to 75. Well, then I sent a Christmas card to Lynn Flynn in Tulsa, and I said, we're starting this group, and it resonated with her. So the next thing I know, we're up in Tulsa, standing room only, front page of the Tulsa World. So I had no idea that this would catch on with so many people. we have on average about 500 attendees between Oklahoma City and Tulsa. We have about 500 attendees every month, and I don't think this could have been done anywhere else but Oklahoma. And I'm really pleased because it shows what our values are in Oklahoma. There really aren't, I'm told, there aren't similar organizations. We had no national group to go to for guidance at all. So this was all seat of our pants.
Well, so are other states reaching out to you in any way to do something similar in their own state?
Yes, we've heard. It takes a lot of initiative, and you need a champion to keep moving forward. Not just a champion, let me put it this way, you need a lot of champions. So I may have been blessed to have that initial concept, but certainly we thrive on volunteer. Every meeting you see about 20, 25 volunteers who are running those programs. Mm-hmm. What people are surprised about is that we don't have bricks and mortar. We don't have a full-time paid employee staff. Our approach was people get sick and tired of being told you can't do this, you shouldn't do that, too many rules. And so our purpose is to continue to inspire and provide practical advice. And I guess it's been about 2 years ago, we started recording a lot of our programs, almost all of them. And we put those, we have our own YouTube channel now, which I think is pretty cool. But we have our own YouTube channel so people can, you know, we can't accommodate everyone who comes to, you know, wants to come to a meeting. But they can take those and share them with their staff. And we encourage people to go back and raise these topics. You have budget meetings, you have sales meetings, you have staff meetings. What really counts is, are you talking about ethics in your company?
We talk about what's legal and what's ethical, and you talk about integrity. How do all those terms relate to you? How do you relate to those terms?
Well, I always kind of look at legal as maybe the floor, if you will. You just don't want to go past that line. But laws, I think, are reactive to bad behavior a lot of times. And there are guidelines. You know, what we emphasize, and of course, ethics, I think, are more the rules and conventions that we're bound by. What I like is something that I got from Warren Martin, but I really liked what he said about integrity, and it stuck with me. It's about aligning your values with your behavior and making sure those values are above the legal or above the minimum. Right. And so I know that when I have all of that lined up, my heart with my head, my values, I do much better. When something's quite, you know, not quite in kilter, I feel it in some way, either physically or emotionally, something feels off. And so I think wholeness gives you some peace of mind. And, you know, granted, nobody's going to, I think that's the biggest thing these days. Nobody's going to pat you on the back when you stand alone and you raise a question or you raise an ethical issue. But in the long run, we have to realize that that's what really counts.
Right, because a lot of people see something or hear something that they believe is not quite right. It's just, it doesn't pass what we might call the smell test.
Exactly.
But they don't know what to do about it. They don't know if they're safe. They don't know if they should raise their hand and say, hey, I think maybe that's a little not right. How do you counsel people who face situations like that?
Well, first of all, you know, there are three things that I tell people. First of all, make sure you have your facts straight. And that's the number one thing. And I think in this day and age, it's becoming increasingly difficult to find out what those facts are, but you can. Second of all, evaluate the problem. Is it truly an ethical issue, or, you know, what's going on? The third thing is, who's affected? And I guess that's where the golden rule comes into play. Who is impacted? And then again, I think the golden rule is so important here. You know, how would you want to be treated here? But I got to tell you, being ethical is not always being safe. We encourage people to speak truth to power. Now, you don't have to be ugly about it. You can approach it diplomatically, keeping in mind you don't know everything. So you may not have all your facts. But I think it's important to raise the question. And, you know, you could be helping somebody who didn't realize, you know, maybe they're doing something out of habit or because the policy said so, and they're not really thinking through what the consequences are. And this is the other part of it, all stakeholders, and how it could compromise their ethics in the long run. Because these things always get found out. They always get found out somehow, some way.
Right. Everything shall be revealed. One of those.
Oh, yeah.
Of
and in today's social media, right. Count on it. Absolutely. Count on it.
Yeah. And sometimes all of those old sins come back to haunt us, you know, because somebody remembers. So, but anyway, the thing about ethics that really interests me. Having been in business a long time and an observer and participant in the political process and so forth, is that ethics fills in a lot of places where our laws and our procedures and what we will accept kind of waver over time. I mean, you mentioned the base, the bottom line, or the floor. I kind of say it this way, that laws are basically the least behavior that we will tolerate before we will take some kind of action, and we're always defining what that is. So we can change a law, we can raise it or lower it, but just because you raise or lower that bar of what's legal doesn't mean you're anywhere close to what really is the right kind of thing to do. That's why ethics to me seems to be almost a moral imperative of some kind. It's something that we as a culture come to be, and we recognize that among each other, and we value that. And when we start losing it, we lose who we are.
You know, as you were talking, I was thinking about, and I wish I'd thought about this beforehand, laws can be relative to a particular culture. Because let's keep in mind that in America, we had slavery. Those were all relative, and until Martin Luther King came along and said there is a higher moral law that we need to be obeying, that is one of the number one premises of ethical behavior, is being respectful to others. But there are some timeless concepts. I don't care if it's from Jesus Christ or the Samurai Code or whatever, there are some timeless principles that we can agree on that are essential for a society to function. Things like honesty. You can't have, and since I'm talking about business ethics, you cannot have an effective system of commerce without honesty. And you can look around the world where there is a lack of that, and you can see how volatile their markets are.
Well, it goes back to, I guess, the principle, the idea of let your yes be yes and your no be no. Your word is your bond, and those kinds of concepts, you know, that we've heard all of our lives probably. And you mentioned Jesus earlier, and I recall his approach to the Sermon on the Mount. As he talked about the law, he said he didn't come to change the law or to do away with it, but then almost in his next breath, he said, now you've heard it said, don't kill, but I say, don't hate. So he goes back and he quotes the law, but then he says, that's not good enough. And so he's basically showing the difference between a law and a higher standard of some kind. And so every time I hear this thing about legal and ethical, for some reason, those examples go through my mind. And I know that we can adjust those laws. Well, we go back, you mentioned the Enron case and those things back in that time, where we adjusted the law to make something that was previously illegal legal, and then we sort of made it legal to violate an ethical principle. And you know where that story went from there. You mentioned integrity a moment ago. How does that kind of play in with the idea of ethics?
Well, that's the glue. I mean, that is the character that drives us to behave in an ethical manner. You start there. You start with this list that we just showed you, and if you
right, you gave me the character first list. Yeah,
and I'll, for example, good character means being dependable. showing deference to others, generosity, all of those things. Those are the things that come from the heart. Those are the virtues that actually drive ethical behavior.
And I saw in your literature that that the consortium actually sort of defers back to this list of character qualities and definitions as a part of what you emphasize in your
organization. Right. It has to be at the heart of any culture. I think if you have this at the center of your culture, you don't have that many rules because people know what's expected
right.
of them, and you reinforce that and you stick with it. The Character First Initiative, it's a completely separate organization.
Right.
Tom Hill started that, was an early mentor and friend to me.
I've always thought of integrity as a word that describes the authenticity of something. We think of it as a good moral quality, and the way I thought of integrity is it is what it is. You can believe it for what it claims to be, and if you're a person of integrity, the way you present yourself is really the way you are.
That
so
goes
forth.
Back to that wholeness.
That whole
yeah,
yes,
you're going to be the same person at church as you are at work, on the soccer field. You're consistent. People know what expectations to have of you. Yet I think integrity, as we define it, is the highest level of honesty, doing the right thing even when nobody's looking.
Earlier on in our conversation, you were talking about how this sort of began. It kind of just caught on. But I'm sure there were probably some times when you had some obstacles to overcome, or you had a few decisions to make that you didn't know what direction to go. How did you get through those?
Well, again, it always went back to the development, careful attention to the development and cultivation of our guiding principles. And we would go back, we would refer to that. You know, when you're a new organization, and I didn't have a clue about how to run a nonprofit. I didn't know what we were getting ourselves into. The growth just exploded, and it's a real blessing. That's not a complaint, but just more of a reflection of, oh my gosh, what have we started? And it grew so rapidly by word of mouth. I mean, we didn't figure out that we really had an organization for about 7 or 8 months. And Lynn looked at me and she goes, you know, Shannon, we can't keep paying for things out of our own pocket.
There you go.
And I said, do you think people will pay dues? And she's like, yes. So we started charging dues like about a year after we got running. So one of the obstacles is learning all the paperwork involved in a 501, C6, and a C3, because keep in mind, we started two at the same time. So there was a pretty serious learning curve. But, you know, people came to us, lawyers and accountants, who gave of their time and really believed in this. They had a passion for it and mentored us and got us through those first few years. But we've gone through different cycles. There was a downturn in the economy, and certainly we've seen that with the energy sector. But I think as long as you keep feeding people, as long as you are given the opportunity to serve, and that's how I view this organization. What a privilege it is to be able to do that. And gosh, we've had so many terrific speakers. Many of them have not charged us. Every once in a while, we bring in somebody from out of town, and we do have to charge for those. But they've been so gracious to us, because this is something that not only resonates in Oklahoma, but other speakers from out of state are like, oh my goodness, we'd love to help you. We've had Cynthia Cooper, who was the whistleblower for WorldCom, and we've had David Myers, who was the perpetrator. And I really enjoyed hearing both sides of that situation, and I will say that I admire both of them. It's fascinating to hear David's story, because I consider him a good person, a highly ethical person. In fact, he was relieved when Cynthia confronted him. Both were facing similar pressures in terms of don't tell anybody what's going on here. Mm-hmm. And if you think back, that was one of the worst situations of fraud that we'd seen prior to the Madoff scandal. And it's interesting because it showed me how people can respond to that kind of pressure.
Right.
I think David is very remorseful. He didn't charge us anything. He's come to talk to our students and to my group about, probably four times. He doesn't live here in Oklahoma. He's never charged us anything for speaking. But you see how good people can take that first step and on that slippery slope. And mm-hmm. and we need each other. We need each other we need to help each other to keep from doing that. Another person I loved was Martin Luther King's speechwriter. What a privilege it was to hear the stories about Dr. King. Oh my goodness, there are just so many local CEOs like Larry Nichols of Devon Energy, Rick Muncrief with WPX, who can do a deal on a handshake. His reputation is so strong. I mean, there's just been every month we are so privileged to host these people in Oklahoma City and Tulsa.
Well, sometimes in our news coverage, we see only the dark side of things or the bad side of things.
Exactly.
I think we need to be reminded that there are many, many, many really good people who are trying to do the right thing. And I guess one thing I've learned about the issue of ethics, as I've kind of studied and listened, is that people don't set out to be immoral or unethical or to do wrong or bad things, but because of circumstances, they make a choice here or a choice there, and it kind of leads them in a certain direction. Before you know, they're kind of invested in that direction, and they're kind of trapped into it, and bad things can happen. And I guess what I can learn from studying ethics is to be more aware of those situations sooner, so that if I find myself in a situation, I could begin to ask the question as early as possible, is this the right thing to do? And should I be taking other kinds of directions or making different choices?
Well, and one thing that I believe is very helpful is surround yourself with people who do care about ethics and integrity. And I think that's what we offer. I mean, you have the ability to call somebody and say, what do you think of this? And test it, because I think we are all equipped with that little internal voice that goes, this doesn't feel quite right. So it's good to check with somebody and mm-hmm. not somebody who is always not a yes person,
right.
But somebody who will help you to critically evaluate the situation and figure out the course of action.
Right. Those are very important people to have in your life. And hopefully that's maybe one lesson we can take away from this podcast is that people, if they don't have a friend like that, they should think seriously about finding that person who's right for them to keep them in check in a certain way.
Exactly. Challenge your ideas and what you're doing. Welcome those people.
Yeah. Because I know along the way, as you're going about changing the world, the world is changing you as well. I mean, what would you say are some of the ways you have grown or changed through this process?
Well, hopefully I have grown. I think the recognizing how important character plays and making sure my values align with that. So for me, and the personal growth has been probably spiritually. I'm very fortunate, very blessed from my OK Ethics connections to have been embraced by a strong Christian influence. And I'm very grateful for that. I think that has enabled me to do other things like outreach. I lead a women's interfaith group that's completely separate from OK Ethics. But I look at how these situations have led me to and through. My husband was terminally ill, and he was very sick for about 3 years. I lost him about 2 years ago. And I think I think I've grown from that experience. I hope I have become more empathetic. I hope from the spiritual side, I have become more generous and loving and accepting.
You know, you have to live a while to realize that you have life lessons. And I remember when I was in my 20s and maybe early 30s, I kind of thought I had it all figured out, only to learn out a few years later that I didn't quite have it all figured out. We learn as we go. As I reach out and work a lot with our young people today, our millennial, we call our millennial generation, I see that they are very concerned about this ethics issue. And I'm wondering, you know, from the lessons you've seen and the people you've encountered along the way, how would you direct them? What would you want to say to them in their young years that you think might be helpful to them as going forward to build a strong ethical base in their own lives?
I guess two things. One, as I see it, relativistic thinking is probably poses the most risk to us. What I see more and more are people staying in their own little comfort groups, comfort zones. And I encourage people, get outside those and test your ideas against somebody who's a different faith perspective, somebody from who maybe is out of your age group, somebody who is a different ethnicity. Test your ideas on that, because I think that helps foster critical thinking. That helps you evaluate your actions. So I think relativistic thinking, because when we stay in our own little groups, we're going to get reinforced over and over again. And those ideas, wrong or right, can become habits. And I think it's a good idea to reach outside our comfort zone. From an ethics standpoint, that's called a confirmation bias. And we see that even with the news sources that we go to. And I think it's a good idea to, because I see that. Now we're so divided that we only go to those particular news sources that reinforce our ideas. And our ideas might be wrong.
Right.
So that's, I think, great. We have to have a sense of humility and be able to look at the other side. Again, ethics involves good for others as well, all your stakeholders, not just your own little group.
It's scary to go out there, because if when we change our mind, we very often have to change our concept of who we are.
Right.
And so we reinvent ourselves in certain ways, and sometimes that's a little uncomfortable.
Good point, because that is all a part of the learning process, is, you know, getting outside your own
exactly.
little group.
Well, a person who is conscious of developing a good ethical base, it would seem to me, would want to sort of venture out there and kind of see what's really going on, so they have a good framework from which to decide.
Exactly.
You mentioned the seed program. If anyone's interested in that, how would they go find information about that particular program?
Right. Well, both organizations have websites. The Oklahoma Business Ethics Consortium is for business professionals, and they can go to okethics.org. And then the Seed Foundation, you could probably do a search that way, but I think it's okethicsbowl.org.
Okay. Well, for our listeners, I will put that on the information on the post itself, so we'll get that right and post it out correctly, so and link to it. The one last thing that I think I would want to at least mention before we conclude today is that because of the political environment and so forth and what's going on, this issue of conflict of interest. From an ethical standpoint, what's been your experience with conflict of interest? And is that really a more complicated problem than what we usually say it is?
Oh, it's really sneaky. There is something called the reciprocation rule, where somebody gives you a gift. You'll remember that, and you'll kind of, you know, it's given to you as a gift, even if it's small, or whether it be thunder tickets or what have you. You will remember that individual, and you may even subconsciously feel a sense of gratitude that you want to throw some business their way, or that kind of thing. So it's pretty sneaky. It can seriously, even without us realizing it, compromise our thinking. Hence the need for transparency. And the one thing that we tell people is just if it even looks this little bit like it, there might be a vested interest in the outcome, don't just get out of the situation. Divulge it. Make sure that you're held accountable for it. But the best thing to do is to not be involved in the outcome, because you can't help it. You're going to be influenced. We're all programmed to make sure we promote our own self-interest.
Well, that's good advice too, and I think we'll let it rest with that. I think that we might be worth the whole program just to talk about that particular issue. But anyway, Shannon, thank you so much for taking your time to talk about the Oklahoma Business Ethics Consortium and your experience with that and helping bring that into being here in the state of Oklahoma. And we congratulate you and wish you the best on future success with that program. And we'll try to round up a lot more participants statewide in it.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Well, that's Shannon Warren. Shannon is the founder and CEO of the Oklahoma Business Ethics Consortium, my guest on this episode of The Spirit of Leading. Well, that's all the time we have for this episode of The Spirit of Leading, and I want to thank you for listening. I also encourage you to recognize and appreciate anyone who demonstrates the spirit of leading at work or in your community. Celebrate those who are living empowered and encourage those who would like to live empowered. Be watching for our next installment. Until then, I urge you to encourage the spirit, to enliven the heart, to enlighten the mind, and to enlarge the expectations of living in yourself and in others. Live each and every day empowered. In the spirit of leading, I'm Garland McWaters. Thank you.